You are listening to the
World Extreme Medicine Podcast.
Welcome back to the podcast with me, Owen Walker. In this episode, we're going to be speaking with Luca Alfatti about the Selvaggia Blu expedition. So what I wanted to do is really dig into Luca's experience of the Selvaggia Blu expedition in Italy, involving this legendary trek that traverses some of the most rugged and breathtaking landscapes across the coast of Sardinia. So stretching over 40 kilometers, this challenging route takes hikers through remote and tame terrain, both into cliff edges, dense Mediterranean forests, across pristine beaches accessible only by foot. Luca, I just wondered if we could, if we could just ask you to take us through a selection, maybe even just a cross-section of the expedition from start to finish for people just watching and or listening as to what to expect if they were to go on the Selvaggia Blu expedition.
Sure. First of all, again, thank you for having me. Do you want me to actually share some photos whilst I talk?
Yeah, that'd be great. That'd be fantastic.
Welcome to Selvaggia Blu, then, Owen, and our listeners. So, first of all, Selvaggia Blu means the wild blue. And I'm hoping this photo will give you a bit of an idea of why it's called like that. It's one of the roughest, most rugged, and considered one of the toughest treks in Europe. And it basically is part of an intersection of the eastern coast of Sardinia in the national park, or in the Baunei National Park. And it just follows an old combination of carbonized track. Carbonized are the coal miners. They're not miners, but they used to be coal people, really, that used to spend weeks or months at a time burning the wood of the trees there to make coal up until about 40, 50 years ago. And also of the pastori, the shepherds, who used to have goats mainly, and pigs with the carbonai up in the mountains. It follows the coast, very rugged, very difficult terrain, steep, rocky, loose rocks, loads of exposed sections where we put ropes up to be able to cross-sect those sections. And it's via ferrata style, although the majority of the times we actually set up the ropes ourselves, with a few abseils too. And this is the beginning, actually, of Selvaggia Blu. It's a recognized trek, as you can tell, and begins, actually, on parallel number 40, the cross-section Sardinia, Italy, and it's right at the beginning of the trek. The beach is a constant feature of the 5 days trek. This is the very, very first beach, actually, where we arrive after a couple of hours of very easy walk initially. We tend to have quite a lot of swimming during the day. There's always a sort of like we drop to the beach, have maybe a bit of a break, have a swim for the ones that want to, and then you have to go back up through the forest or to the rocks all the way up to the top quite often, because there are no ways to actually keep going straight through from beach to beach, basically. And this day actually is one of the toughest one, as you're going from sea level to about 400-600 meters on a very, very steep incline, loose rock, and it can be really hot as well. And this gives you a little bit of an idea of the terrain. Is a lot of limestone. There is always some sort of scrambling, climbing, and basically need some very, very good, steady footings and confidence in your walking abilities. There's not such a thing as climbing. You're not really climbing as such with harnesses or anything like that, but there is quite a lot of scrambling for sure. This is just to give you a bit of an idea of the sort of exposure that you might be seeing throughout this week. I don't know if you can tell, we have actually rigged this wall face, and there's a little blue, is the rope that has been set up specifically to get across by us. So I'm going to try to, not necessarily to take you on a day-to-day, but follow the journey that we did on the recce last year, me and Water Stream Medicine founder Mark Hannaford. And there is a constant in this trek whereby you're in a very remote area of the island. And when you're trekking, you can't really be reached by anybody, not by land, not by water, only by people on foot if really something goes wrong, or by helicopter. There's a search and rescue service in the whole of the island. So this is the first day moving from the refugio, where we stay in the first night, where we sort of like all meet up, to the beginning of the trek with the Land Rovers. This is the refugio, actually, where we're going to meet and have our first meeting. This gives you also an idea of the kind of people that get to do this trek. You don't have to be a super experienced climber. You don't have to be, you know, an 18, 20 years old, super fit person. But you obviously have to have some confidence in walking and in your abilities to walk. Just a little bit of an idea of what quite often, every day, we end up setting up some small abseiling, some small cross Via Ferrata style roping for the sections that are more exposed and more difficult or more dangerous to get across. Exactly like this one. This is day one. After we come up from the beach, for example, we have a beautiful little place where we have lunch. If we're going to do it there, it all depends on the speed of walk, the group, the day, the weather. And then we had to set up a bit of a roping just to make sure. It's quite exposed, as you can see on the left, just to make sure that we keep everyone safe. Again, a little bit of an upsail, climb down right on... I think this is I love this photo. It's just because it gives you an idea of why it's called Wild Blue, just with the beach just down at the bottom there for you. It's not all rocks. It's not all limestone climbing and abseiling and scrambling. Some parts are a little bit easier, like this photo shows us. And it's just a continuous opening of windows of just amazing landscape and amazing panorama, really. If you can see the Pau de Azúcar down at the bottom, the little mountain, if you like, that is actually where we started the first day. And you keep sort of like looking back and seeing where you walked, how far you've gone, the up and downs. And it just gives you an idea of how hard this trek can be. This is a great photo of the limestones that you get to walk on. You need some really good, sturdy footwear. It's really hot, and at the time of the year we are going to be doing it, end of September, is still going to be very hot and potentially quite high humidity. Although we start with the winds of the season that hopefully, especially at night, are going to give us a little bit of a rest from the heat and from the humidity. And then again, more scrambling, going down from the beach, coming back up, and there is only certain ways that you can actually approach some parts of the trek. Some people probably ask, is there a map that you can follow, or do you need to be very good at map reading? Yes, but the path is not always obvious. It's not always marked. And in an area like this, it's really, really important to stick together as a team, have people there, have a knowledge of the area, and they have done this trail before. It's quite interesting, and in this specific WAM course, we are not going to do a full search and rescue exercise, and I think it's important for people to know, and it's because actually it's so rugged, remote, and difficult to navigate that the risk of actually getting lost is really high. Just a few more photos of it's just really to give you an idea of the technicalities that we may face in some of these days. An interesting fact: there are loads of wild pigs, and we're not speaking about wild boar. As you can tell here, they're actually wild pigs who were that were taken there by the coal miners dozens of years ago. And when they moved, they sort of left them, and they kept breeding. And now you have like a lot of wild pigs, which are very active at night, and we need to be aware of it, because sometimes they ransack the campsite. This is night two of this is called Puerto Pedroso, which means the port of rocks, or the rocks harbor. And tonight, the only way to get our bags, our food, is actually through a Zodiac boat that comes to us through the inlet. As I said, really remote, really, really difficult to get to us if something is to go wrong. Another, like, this is the constant view as we actually see throughout the days as we traveling north. You can do a south to north, north to south, or south to north. We will be doing a south to north route, so looking up towards the north of the coast, and the water is just considered some of the cleanest and clearest water in the world. These are there are loads of these actually across the track. The houses of the Carbonaris, that they're not really used anymore. They were used for sleeping, but they were also used for making the coal, or for cutting cheese, actually. They used to make cheese up in the mountains as well. And this is day three, if I'm not wrong. There are a lot of these pinnacles, and we are looking down at the beach where we are actually going to have a break around lunchtime. So we're really high, 300-400 meters high, probably a little bit more. And we're going to have a very steep, deep drop down onto the beach. And as I said, there is always an opportunity to have a swim for the ones that want to swim, obviously. This is an iconic part of Selvaggio Blu. Is a beautiful overhanging cave onto the beach itself, and we set up the abseil for the day, and we just all abseil down. It's about 30 meters abseil. Is absolutely the photo is not going to give it justice. It's an absolutely unique, stunning part of the world where to go and play, but it's not just play, obviously. It's a great environment to put ourselves in as medics, expedition medics. And it opens up a lot of very great discussions about what it can go wrong, what sort of injuries we might see. And when I thought about this trek for a World History Medicine course, it was because we often say that an important part of being an expedition medic is actually being able to be a very good team member and be able to look after ourselves. If you're not able to, as expedition medics in this specific situation, but in any situation, to look ourselves after ourselves well, to have that bandwidth where we don't need to worry about ourselves from like a physical perspective or from a technical perspective, that means it opens up our bandwidth to be able to then look after a potential casualty. So it's a great introduction if you've not been yourself on a proper expedition, if you've not been yourself sleeping for 6 days in outdoors or in a tent without shower. This is a great way of seeing what you're made of. And if this is really what you want to get yourself into. The food is, we're in Italy. I'm not going to shy away from this. The food is absolutely outstanding, probably better than restaurant quality. Fresh orata, just fished in the morning from the sea here on one of the barbecue nights. It's all outdoors. It's all improvised. This is just a big wooden plank onto rocks, but that gives you an idea of how rocky the terrain can be, and the kind of people that basically like to do stuff like this. There are loads of caves. This is one of the most famous ones that can be that we may come across. We decided to go and have a look at this one, for example. And it's also a great little rest from the heat as it gets really cool and wet inside these caves. Well, this is just the end of the presentation, really. Me with Mark, day three or four, you can tell how hot it is. That is not water, that is sweat that you're seeing there. Thank you. And I don't know if you've got any questions. I would like to also thank Marco Ludovisi, is one of the team members that you've seen in the photos, and he's got passion for photography. So the photos are all from Marco, who is part of one of the climbing clubs in central Italy, in Orvieto, and has kindly shared the photos with us.
Nice, Luca. That's fantastic. And it's just really, really nice to get an overall view of the expedition in pictures. But could you maybe speak to the most challenging aspect of the expedition?
Yes, there are a few. But for us in that specific time of the year, I think it was the heat. The heat and the humidity that sometimes you will experience in this trek. It's not just the humidity, don't get me wrong, and you can get those days where it's a little bit cooler. The fact that you are not far from the water at least once or twice a day, you can spend a couple of hours maybe trying to cool down and have a swim. But definitely the heat can be really oppressing. And you can never relax from a walking perspective. It's not going on a Saturday stroll, I don't know, up the Kinder Plateau here in the UK, for example. It's, you always have to look at where you put your feet. It's really rocky. It's really steep. And there are sections that can go on for quite a long time, for quite a few hours, where you really have to be on the ball with your feet and with your mind just to make sure that you don't make that error that could be, you know, some of those errors could have consequences of a certain kind.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question, actually, around how experienced you need to be on this trek. So just on average, what would you want as far as experience for a trek like this?
It's a very good question. And it's not, this is not, it's graded as a difficult trek on international scale grading, but you don't have to have any specific technical experience. So anyone with a decent level of fitness that is, you know, comfortable with a little bit of exposure, and it doesn't mean, you know, I don't know, Via Ferratas in the Alps where you're like, you know, 1,000 meters high, but there are some exposed parts. So I say it's for everyone, but for everyone that's got the right attitude, a decent level of fitness. You don't have to be, you know, you don't have to be NIMSY climbing Everest, but you need to have a little bit of a fitness with you. And so, yeah, I would actually encourage anyone to join us. But I wanted to be quite honest in the presentation, in the photos and in the descriptions of what the challenges could be.
So looking back at the expedition itself, would you say this is probably one of the top five treks that you've done globally?
I'm a bit biased because obviously I'm Italian myself, and I've been trying for years to obviously get to Italy in a professional capacity. So definitely, yes, it's up there for a host of different reasons. Not seconded to the food, obviously, because expedition is always sort of like associated with eating out of tins or not eating much or not having great food. So the food is amazing, but you've seen from the photos the area is unique and is stunning. Yeah, it's up there with one of the five treks, best treks I've ever done. Absolutely.
So just looking at the logistics, Luca, and indeed the rope work, could you speak to, is there a lot of logistics involved and indeed a lot of rope work, abseiling, belaying, or indeed climbing?
there is a huge amount of logistics involved, which we will be privy to, but we don't have to worry about, if that makes sense. But I think it's a great insight for people that will join us to understand how much work there is behind expeditions in general. This one specific as well has got an added element where we're not tracking with our full packs. It's virtually impossible to do that. It's been done, don't get me wrong. And if you are very, very experienced, you know what you're doing and so on and so forth, is doable, but not within 5 days. So our packs are always picked up in the morning and taken away, and we don't see them until the evening. Sometimes they get taken to us with the Land Rovers. Sometimes they come around on the coast with the boats. Food, we're taking the food for the day with us, but the morning's breakfast has to arrive to us, and in the evening's dinner has to arrive to us. It's cooked for us right there, or it's taken to us from the main refugio. As a crow fly, we're never really that far from the refugio where we're going to finish, start and finish. But because of the terrain and because of how difficult it is to navigate, to get anywhere, it feels like you're literally days away from anywhere and the civilization. So the logistics are huge. Fortunately, we don't have to worry too much about it. But there will be frustrating evenings where we might get delayed by the bags and it starts raining. The food might arrive a couple of hours later. This is all stuff that can be frustrating at the time, but if you are there to actually learn, it really brings home what it takes to run a really good expedition. And then that from a logistics perspective. What was your other question? Sorry.
It was just more around any rope work, or do people have to have technical expertise?
No, you don't need to have technical expertise. We have professional guides with us. So there will be myself, another WEM faculty, and two professional mountaineering guides with us who will do the setup. And actually, we won't allow anyone to actually do the live setup of the ropes for safety reasons. But there will be workshops on rigging, on setting up ropes, on doing knots and so on and so forth. And then there will be the opportunity, live opportunity during the trekking, to actually see how that all comes together when you are setting up a live traverse, for example, to get across 10, 12, 15 people at a time.
So finally, Luca, as we come into land, could you maybe speak to what you would say to anyone considering this trek?
Do it. No, it's beside the jokes. Definitely is a great opportunity for wannabe expedition medics, for people that already maybe do it in occasionally or in their work life, to challenge yourself. Not necessarily from a medical perspective, because hopefully we won't need to do anything for real, but at the same time to really see if it is for you, to really see if hard expeditions where, as I said, you're away. We're in Sardinia, but we could easily be in northern Chad climbing Emikusi. That's how remote it feels sometimes, and how difficult it would be to get someone out of the mountains. If that is really what you want to get yourself into, because it's absolutely amazing. And this is a very safe, nice way of speaking medicine, and actually putting all those theories and all those workshops into an environment where we can't really go back to our headquarters at the end of the day for a nice brew and a shower.
Yeah, it sounds like it's truly immersive, actually, and also educational, but it is that absolutely experiential learning on an expedition, which is fantastic. Luca, thank you for your time today.
You're very welcome.
We appreciate, you taking us through the expedition has been hugely helpful, so thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the episode.
Please feel free to rate, review, and subscribe on whichever platform you're listening to. Please also head over to the World Extreme Medicine website, where you can find more engaging content on extreme medicine webinars and indeed the collection of courses from our global network, including humanitarian, disaster relief, expedition, space, military, tactical, and performance medicine. Thanks again.